Pickaxe.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome back to the Review of Death, a Doctor Who podcast. Your fortnight
struggling through.
I did.
He's done it.
I did it. Your fortnightly home for Doctor Who news and reviews. It's the new year. It is 2022.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year. We've had Christmas. We're into the new year. And that means new Doctor Who.
It does.
We had a new Doctor Who on the 1st of January. Mm. It was Eve of the Daleks.
And what did you think of it, Matthew?
It's all right.
Did you like it?
Yeah, it was all right.
Excellent. I'm glad to hear. Thanks very much for watching, everybody.
I didn't think it was like some massively amazing thing. I preferred last year's Dalek story. Yeah, I thought it was more of a Dalek-y story.
I really liked last year's Dalek story as well.
So did I, yeah.
I haven't really thought about, when I made notes, rewatching it and watching it the first time, I didn't really think about it in the context of the last Dalek story we got.
Yeah.
Which I suppose is more of like, that's more of like a Dalek invasion story.
Yeah.
Whereas this is much more of a Base Under Siege Dalek story.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like the two best types of Dalek story.
Yeah.
You're getting across the two of them. And I thought Eve of the Daleks was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
I really, really enjoyed it.
There you go.
What did you get up to over New Year's anyway, Matthew?
What did I get up to over New Year's? I don't know. I played Monopoly with my mum and my brother.
There is no better way to spend it.
Yeah. What about you?
I was in Liverpool.
Yeah.
That was good fun.
Yeah.
Didn't see the TARDIS, which is apparently in the World's Museum.
Did you see any Sontarans?
Didn't see any Sontarans.
No.
No, I didn't see any Carvanistas running around
pissing
up lampposts either.
One leg cocked.
Which was disappointing. Coming into Eve of the Daleks.
Yes.
I have to make sure I say Eve rather than evil, because the temptation to say evil is too great.
I keep saying Eve around the house and Johnny's like, Eve of the Daleks? No, Eve of the Daleks. The title, what do we think?
It's on New Year's Eve and there are Daleks in it. It's the Eve of the Daleks' triumph of killing the Doctor.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think it's a bit of a... it's not the best title in the world.
What else have we got? Storage Unit of the
Daleks. Storage Unit of the Daleks.
What did you think about it going... Because, you know, everybody who wants to, you know, shit on this era said, huh, interesting that no one's talking about Doctor Who and it's on in like 3 days. And I was like, well, you know, busy doing Christmas stuff.
Things.
You know,
people
are doing things other than complaining about a TV show on the internet.
Yeah, of course.
I was buzzing for it. It's a Dalek story.
Same. I was looking forward to it. I'd read the production note things in DWM, and I said to Jonathan, my brother, for those of you who don't know, I have to do that now.
We haven't introduced ourselves. Hello,
this
I'm
week.
Billy. This is Matthew.
Yeah. Hello, yeah. So I said to my brother, oh, it's apparently a rom-com with Daleks. Oh, here we go.
Such a lame way of describing it.
Yeah, I'm watching
because
it.
Because the rom... There was com.
Yeah.
I'd say there's a lot of com.
There wasn't much rom.
But there wasn't much rom.
No.
No.
There was a distinct lack of rom. In fact, most of the rom came from the Doctor and Yaz.
True. And the rom that involved the two central characters has posed quite an interesting conversation on how much of a fucking creep Nick is.
Yes.
Should we talk about that?
Yeah, let's talk about it.
So, Nick has lots of girlfriends.
Yeah.
And because he lives in a small apartment.
Yeah.
He can't keep all the stuff they leave there. Why they're leaving that much stuff there as they appear to be like one-night stands or whatever, I don't know.
Who knows? Perhaps this one-night stand thought, I don't want to shag you, I want to play Monopoly with you instead.
And somebody else went, I'm going to leave my roller disco boots here as well.
Yeah.
Lots of like, there was one with lots of jeans stacked up as well.
Yeah.
You know, okay. So obviously there is a very creepy element to that.
Yeah.
And that's the end of that segment.
Yeah,
really. I think the fact that they had to do a bit where he said, I live in a small flat, I can't really... And that went on for quite a while.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, if you have to justify the optics of this,
and the fact
maybe
that,
don't do it.
The fact that Yaz and Aisling B's character were both like, this guy is clearly a murderer slash rapist.
I thought Yaz kind of backed him up a little bit. Was Yaz not saying, don't call him that? I mean...
No, because she turned around and she was like, they're all still alive, right?
Oh, yeah,
and,
true.
You know, and I thought, okay, that is amusing. But yeah, when you look at it, like the nuts and bolts of this whole thing, you'll be like, well, why would she then, towards the end of the story, fall in love with this guy?
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Regardless of whether he tried to save her life, which is what my brother said, oh, well, he saved her life. He went to save her life. He gives a shit. He's got a bloody collection of women's bits and bobs up in his bloody...
I know. There was a whole back section as well. It's probably freezers full of heads in there.
And someone else pointed this out on Twitter, and I can't remember who it was. But they said, interesting that this is a guy who can't pluck up the courage to say to this girl, oh, by the way, I've got a crush on you. Yet he somehow manages to have a girlfriend for every day of the fucking week looking at his storage thing.
I'd say it's because... she's the one, Matt. That's why.
Ah, right. I see.
But having said that, when you were talking about they're together and they've gone off on this holiday, I know she said, I've got this romantic notion of like going away, traveling the world with somebody. I didn't get massive romantic vibes off of them. I just thought, they're pally. He obviously fancies her. She probably fancies him. They're just going to see what happens while they're away.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I took it as. But
probably not much because COVID.
True.
Not much travelling going on there. Get to the airport and
she probably got
off.
A massive insurance payout from that thing exploding. Yeah.
In Bristol.
I mean,
this is cool.
Manchester.
That annoyed me. I was like, I'll say it's in Bristol.
It is in Bristol.
Manchester.
That's right on the harbour side. If you ever want to go to Riverside Garden Centre, it's very good. But you also get to stare at the
bricks.
The bricks. They're still there. It didn't get knocked down. That was a very impressive bit of CGI.
I must say, the CGI in this episode was very good.
Even something really simple. But obviously very technical, like a Dalek blowing a door open.
That
looked clearly
really cool.
CG.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there may have been some physical elements in there, but the actual door being blown in that shape was obviously CG.
And like when the Daleks blew up themselves, that looked really good. That red outline, that sort of singed, burning
What
metal.
Did you think of the extermination effects?
Yeah, I thought it was cool.
Because I think the close-up on their gurning skulls got a little bit like, all right, you know, maybe... do it from a different, and maybe we see their legs go all X-ray this time or whatever, but it was always their face.
Always the face.
But also it was quite a nice marker of like, right, that's this loop done now, and all that kind of stuff.
Nobody screamed
when they got exterminated.
I noticed that second time round. I thought, oh, interesting.
That would have got a bit grating though.
Yeah, and is that a bit too horrible? You know, our kid's going to be like, I don't want to keep hearing Doctor Who scream to death.
I was thinking that, like, you know, they didn't kind of address the fact that we're going to have to go through the agony of being exterminated eight times.
Yeah, I did think that, you know, would there be a bit of like PTSD from the pain of it all, you know? But I guess it's a New Year's, it's special. You're not going to want to be dwelling on...
No, crack on with the action, I think. Let's just crack on with the action. So, obviously, we start at the self-storage centre. That weird introduction scene that they had. And it's like, well, he clearly fancies her. She's actually not that pleasant an individual.
No,
but...
I think this is the thing. Neither of them are necessarily all that likable.
So maybe they're perfect for each other
in that case. So maybe they are, yeah. He's clearly a weirdo. I mean, I did appreciate, as a weirdo, I did appreciate the line about, what was it, something like, weirdos are good.
Well-meaning weirdos.
Well-meaning weirdos or something, yeah. The ones that are keepers. I was like,
agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed.
There's no one who's come to keep me yet. But,
not well, we'll
get there.
Maybe you need to find an Aisling B or somebody who stores all of your stuff in a self-storage unit.
Fuck, they're not the one for me.
They have a bit of a strange
Cyberman is not going in self-storage.
No, the Cyberman has to stay here. They have a weird kind of conversation at the start.
Yeah.
You get vibes, he fancies her, she's a bit of a dick.
Yeah.
But what
You would be pissed off having to work New Year's Eve. Actually, I probably wouldn't. I'm not that fussed about New Year's. Christmas would be different.
I'm really glad that when that scene was done, because I thought, you know, there are certain things happening, certain elements of conversation that are probably markers that you have to remember.
Yeah.
Because I didn't quite know how the time loop thing would work if they had to literally redo everything again.
Yeah.
Because that scene was so long at the start, I thought, well, the phone going off, and then her moving to the cupboard, you're going to have to kind of try and remember their movements and stuff. But what I thought was really lovely is straight out of the titles, they're back there in that conversation. They're like, this feels weird.
Yeah.
And I love the fact that it just cracked on with it and it gave you enough techno babble to kind of get where it's going.
Yep.
And the fact that the Doctor and other companions and other characters in it kind of immediately get what is happening.
Yeah.
Was really nice.
Yeah, you know. I think this is the thing. We live in a world where, well, they make a point of it, where Yaz and the Doctor go time loop and then Dan goes Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
It's like, well, we live in a world where we kind of know this, what this sort of stuff would be.
Exactly.
Know? I think we would because we're sad Doctor Who geeks, but, you know, I think most people go, oh yeah, we're in a time loop. And like, also, even my mum said something about a time loop while we were watching it. And I was like, okay. She's got the gift of the gab as well.
And Stel was saying to me when we were watching it, so is the TARDIS caused this time loop, or is it the Daleks that have done something? And
it was the TARDIS, like, wasn't it?
It was the TARDIS. But I did wonder about the force field around the building.
Yeah.
And watching it again, I've got a couple of questions about it, but the main thing, watching it again, is the Daleks appear to be responsible for it.
Yeah.
The force field.
Yeah.
Why only the front door, though? Is it because the building's so big they feel like they can pen them in and just be constantly shooting them until time runs out, or
I don't know, maybe their force field only does one more.
maybe only one more.
I think this is like the last Daleks in existence. That there wasn't much clarity there on that, was there?
No, I mean the reason that they have been dispatched, this execution squad, is to kill the Doctor.
Yeah,
because she wiped out millions of Daleks during the last Flux event.
Yeah.
I'm really happy we got some references to Flux.
Yeah.
I'm really happy that we saw the TARDIS in a real state.
Yeah.
That whole bit when she leaps out the TARDIS and the console collapses in on itself.
That's really cool.
So cool.
Yeah, and all the walls are all like jigging about.
And they're like moving and stuff. Yeah, that looked amazing. So why haven't they put the force field on the back entrance?
I don't know.
Hey, let's not ask too many questions.
No, I hadn't actually thought about that.
No.
That didn't even cross my mind.
That's kind of the biggest contrivance that I have a problem with in this story.
Okay.
There's obviously the main one that people have brought up is the Daleks not being able to kill people when they move, which we'll get to in a minute.
Yeah.
But, you know, whatever. I loved everything about the Daleks in this story.
Yeah, they were good.
I thought that they expressed a level of intelligence, which you want to see out of a Dalek. A real level of proper brutality that you tend not to get with them.
Yeah, and real menace as well.
Genuine menace.
I think the way it was directed, and this was a first-time director for TV.
Yeah, I've got their name somewhere.
And I was really impressed watching it. And I just loved the way that they presented the Daleks, like all of those shadowy shots. And yeah, they felt imposing, even though there was only two of them.
Annetta Lawther, I think her name is.
Okay, yeah. She was really good. And I thought... I thought she did a terrific job with those. Well, with all of it, you know, the humour of it, the getting around the sciencey, wyancey stuff of it, and explaining how the time loop works and all that stuff. I thought she did a really good job.
I really liked that sequence where the Dalek blasts the fuse box.
Yes.
And then Azeline is cornered in a lift,
and it's
coming at her, and it kills her.
Yeah.
And then they go downstairs, and Nick's got the torch, and the jump scare with the Dalek behind him.
Yeah.
That was really cool. Goes to show you can make the props menacing without having to take the mutants out of them and doing weird shit with them, which I'm not against, but it's just nice to see the props being shot really nicely and actually being menacing and stuff like that. I also really like the bit when Nick runs out of the storage unit when he's like, okay, I get it, it's all my fault. He kind of sacrifices himself.
Yeah.
And even though he probably would have worked out by that point that they're going to come back because the Doctor wasn't too far behind on that and everybody else picked up very quickly. But he kind of talks to Azline and then turns to the Dalek and he's like, I'm going to do my grand speech. And he gets two words in and it blasts him.
Yeah.
And that was really, really good.
Yeah. And like even at the beginning when he comes out and he's like, oh, identify. And he's like, I'm Nick. And he just shoots him and it's just like,
gone.
Fantastic.
Cool.
That's what you want.
Excellent.
And I also like the humour. I think my brother was a bit annoyed with it, but I liked the humour of the Daleks because they weren't I think my brother couldn't quite get the grasp of the comedy here, but it was like, you know, the Daleks aren't being silly or funny.
No.
The humour comes from the fact is they're being incredibly Dalek.
They are just matter of fact.
Yeah, they are repeating everything as it is being delivered to them.
I am not Nick.
yeah, I am not Nick. You know, the Daleks do not store stuff.
No.
Yeah, and Johnny was like, oh, for God's sake. I said, no, think about it. Dan just said that. He's just repeating. And he was like, oh, okay. And that was fine.
I liked the Daleks learn bit as well.
Yeah.
That was properly menacing.
Yeah.
And the Doctor finally.
Yeah.
A Dalek has actually killed the Doctor on screen. If you ended the story there.
Yeah. That's what my brother said. My brother happened. When the music started, he was like, oh, well, that's it.
I did think it would have been so cool if they had left that shot out of the trailer.
Yes.
And so, because you kind of think, you know, well, Daleks learn, and then there's that final exterminate. Oh, it's all right. And then blasted. Whoa, shit.
Yeah.
And then titles. And then maybe we didn't even know it's like a Groundhog Day episode and stuff. And that would have been neat.
That would have been cool. I do like the way that they did in the build-up for the episode coming out. They did that trailer, which was just a constant loop of the trailer. That was clever.
Yeah. And the Twitter account constantly posting anybody getting deja vu.
Yeah.
All that kind of stuff. It was nice that they played with it really well. Also talking about the Daleks being particularly menacing, and this is mainly down to Asleen B, who I think everybody has said online was phenomenal.
Yeah, she was excellent.
Absolutely
She's
amazing.
Such a good actress.
So good.
And Jonathan turned around to me while we were watching it, and he's like, she'd be an amazing Doctor Who.
She would.
Yeah.
And I'd never seen her act before. I'd only ever seen her do her sort of like comedy.
Yeah.
But I had no idea she had chops like that on her. She was really good. And one of my favourite bits with her was when the second time around she goes downstairs and she has the face off with that Dalek.
Yeah.
And he has, you know, fear responses detected, all that kind of stuff. He's like, well, obviously, and all that. That was really cool.
Yeah.
And she does that kind of, she's trying to put on a brave face, but it's like, you're still terrified of me.
Yeah, when the Dalek says it, you can see how she sort of crumbles a bit, isn't she there?
And really the fact that she actually kind of behaves like that all the way through, you're like, well, she's petrified all the way through this.
Yeah.
And there's only a couple of moments where she lets that show, like when she's in the lift and she talks to Mrs. Doyle.
I know Mrs. phone. Doyle.
I felt a bit gutted when I looked at the credits afterwards because you said she was in it.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, she's only on a phone.
Yeah, it was a shame.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that, but I read a thing where Jodie Whittaker said, oh, I didn't actually work with Pauline, whatever her name is.
Gutted.
Mrs. Doyle. And I was like, oh, so she's not going to be in it much then. But
yeah.
Never mind. I thought maybe Mrs. Doyle might be the new Davros. Mrs. Davros.
Mrs. Davros. Oh, go on now. If I had a vial.
Now, would you like to exterminate a human? go on.
I'd like to talk about it.
About what?
I'd like to talk about plot armor.
Okay, yeah. You explain to me what plot armor is. I'm seeing this word going around on Twitter a lot.
Okay.
Explain to me and the people who may not know.
From what I understand, plot armor is something that people have started to notice in Western media.
Right.
In the last sort of like 3 months.
Right.
Where because the script needs the characters to get to the next scene.
Yeah.
They don't get killed.
Right.
Right? Because suddenly something that can shoot can't hit them.
Right.
So they've developed armor that allows them to get to the next bit because the plot needs them to do so.
Fair enough. Right. Okay.
So the first instance of this plot armor that people have been going on about, incidentally, plot armor in an episode where all of the main cast and the guest cast die 8 times on screen. And also, oh no, I'm not doing Moffat bashing anymore.
It's a new year.
So the Doctor, Nick, Sarah, Yaz and Dan meet together for the first time.
Yeah.
Right, it's the first instance of said plot armour in the story. And the Dalek blasts force them into Nick's lockup.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Now, I'm just going to say, because I think a lot of people who've been moaning about it I've probably only seen it once.
Mm-hmm.
It's nowhere near as egregious as anybody makes out because it's actually not a problem anyway in anything. Because this seemed to pop up when the Sontarans couldn't hit Dan running down
back streets. I think it was far more ridiculous in that instance than in this
Fine.
One. Because there was like 9 Sontarans right behind one man.
Exactly.
It's like, come on.
But I have to say, there's a couple of bits in it that I think, it's not a problem anyway. It's a contrivance that people are forcing on the episode because they want to bash it.
Yeah.
I honestly cannot see any other reason why you'd be talking about plot armor.
Yeah.
Other than bashing it for the sake of it.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you know, people bring up stormtroopers in their conversations about it. Well, that is... I watched The Rescue, the last episode of Mandalorian.
Yeah.
And I finished Mandalorian.
When you said The Rescue, I was like, oh, the William Hartnell story.
No, well, if there's plot armor in that, then, you know...
I mean, Barbara's a brilliant shot in that
story. True. I watched The Rescue. It was the last episode of Series 2 of The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
Not only are the dark troopers shit... Yeah. Right, because they are rubbish in that. They can't do anything.
Yeah.
But, like, Luke Skywalker, that fucking long corridor, fine, he's got the Force. But, A, they're useless. And the stormtroopers can't shoot anything. I know that that's a gag.
Yeah, yeah.
But watching it, I just thought, this is mental.
Yeah.
This is actually mental. Yeah. There's extended sequences of, that is bad. This isn't. This isn't anywhere near the same kind of thing. It isn't.
I think the trouble is, you can't have an issue with stuff like that. Not really, because it's just part of the makeup of
everything.
Every sort of adventure type of series film that you're ever going to watch.
Yeah.
There's always, in anything, like I said to you earlier, they do it in Bond, they do it in superhero things. Anything, you're like, oh, well, obviously they'd get killed in that instance.
Yeah.
But
there's no fucking story then, is there?
Yeah, but you just have to suspend your disbelief and go, okay, all right, they just managed to dodge it. You know?
Fine. And also, in this story, I don't think it's even that bad, because they set up, the Dalek screams, stand still.
Yeah.
It's an execution Dalek.
Yeah.
How many executions have you seen of people running around,
yeah.
getting caught? Like, you stand in one spot and someone does you in.
Yeah.
And the Gatling gun, great at close range.
Yeah.
But clearly, you can see it in every moment in that story, when they're at a fair distance,
they
can't hit shit because the Gatling gun spins and it shoots lasers
everywhere. Yeah.
You can see in the CGI, that's how they've designed it.
Yeah.
I just think people are having a go at it for the sake of it.
Yeah.
I can't see it as anything other than that.
Like, you could say it about so many Doctor Who stories, though, old and new. I mean, I can't really think of one off the top of my head, but I'm sure there's instances where, oh yeah, that Cyberman would have obviously shot the Doctor in that corridor, or you know, any of that stuff.
Why does it? It will cost you your life.
Yeah, it's like, just
kill him.
Why are you saying this? Yeah.
Just blast him. You don't have to have a conversation about it.
Yeah,
but it's just fiction.
Mm.
If that's how all these people complaining about it watch telly, it must be miserable. I tweeted, because it was, and I do stand by this. It is a lazy bit of criticism to levy that at this script or any story and say, proof Chris Chibnall's rubbish. The Dalek couldn't hit anything in a corridor. If you want to have a go at anything, and I will say that the Dan bit where he's running round the side of the Dalek, I kind of thought, that's kind of clever because no one's done that in a story before, but it goes on for far too long.
Yeah.
And if that was the Metaltron, it would have spun its gun section round and blasted him.
Yeah.
So lucky the Daleks have had a significant downgrade.
Sucked his face off.
Or sucked his face off, indeed. What do you think of the new appendage? Because it's the first time we've seen it on like a Dalek not in that one story that they first appeared in.
I'm not massive. I mean, it's all right. It doesn't. I think had we have seen it doing
something,
it might have been fine. Like if we'd seen it picking something up or I don't know, fiddling with something.
I quite like it because like the plunger is iconic.
Yeah.
But it actually, when you probably come to write something, you think, well, what can it do? Every switch in this Dalek saucer is going to have to be, you know,
convex or whatever. Yeah.
And it's going to have to be shaped like a Dalek plunger.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you have a thing that opens up and it's got the silhouette, the circular silhouette of a Dalek plunger, but it's got appendages on the inside, I think it's a really cool idea. I really don't...
Yeah, it's all right.
I can't see the RTD Daleks having plungers unless they're significantly sort of like...
Yeah.
Imperial ones.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's cool, isn't it? How the Imperial ones have, you know, is a plunger, but
they've
tweaked it and done
They've got those
to it.
Indents so they can actually put them into controls and move them around. Like, it works really well. This whole plot armor thing is nuts. And if people, genuinely are hanging their hat on that being the reason why this story is rubbish. I can't get my head around it.
I've just thought of a great example.
Go on.
The Invasion, when Pat Troughton is running away from all those Cybermen shooting at him. You know,
I've seen somebody try and argue that that isn't... that like oh, yeah, but that's different.
What, because it's black and white?
Well, because it's played for comedy. Because he keeps licking up his arse.
Well, so what?
The flames keep licking up his arse, not Tobias Vaughan.
I think that Pat Troughton is licking up his own arse. Like, wow, he's very dexterous for an old man.
Do you know Pat Troughton got two of his ribs removed, so he could do that? Yeah.
If you're gonna, it's just a bit bonkers.
It's nuts.
Of all the things to moan about.
I know. I'm sorry I've taken up so much of the time talking about a ridiculous bit of criticism.
I think that's fair enough, because if it's currently in the discussions of the Doctor Who world, then I think it's very fair that we bring it up.
Yeah.
And, you know, put our two pennyworth in it.
Absolutely.
I mean, people listening might think, no.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I'm more than happy to have people say that what I said isn't correct.
Yeah. But
you're still wrong, but, like, it doesn't matter.
This is just our soapbox.
It annoys me so much.
Yeah.
It really winds me up, because it is like the... I think people who are making that point think they get it.
Yeah.
I don't mean to sound like above it all or whatever, but that's not criticism.
No.
That's just pointing something out that happens in everything and saying it's bad in this and that therefore it makes it bad. It's like, it isn't even the most egregious plot armor I've seen in the last month in stuff that I've consumed.
Yeah, and I mean, like, really, looking at this story, my biggest issue was Dan didn't really have much to do.
True.
That was my real issue. Was like, in fact, one point in the story is like, I'll just go downstairs and get killed.
That's true.
To help you out.
So just so you know, I'm here.
Yeah.
Because I know I can get away with it. I'm going to die anyway. But just so you remember, I'm here, Doctor. I thought, actually, that bit where they're in the lift and he sort of says, you know, I'll go downstairs and distract that one. I thought was the first time he kind of earned his companion stripes.
Yeah.
It was like, the Doctor kind of looks at him like, okay, he can do this, you know, and it's the first time he's put himself in the line of fire in that way. And I think it had to happen eventually.
Yeah.
But you're right, he's pretty sidelined. Sort of, I mean, he's only really there for the Dalek to say he's thick.
Yeah.
And for Yaz to go, don't say that.
Yeah.
And that's it. He just kind of looks bemused most of the time.
Yeah, I mean, he is the comic foil. I mean, obviously, this story had quite a lot of comic foil, but he is the comic foil, generally speaking.
Yeah.
And he does it well. I'm like, no, I like that exchange with the Dalek, with the trying to drop off the parcel and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That's what he's there for, and it added a bit of fun to an otherwise very dark story where your main cast dies repeatedly.
But considering that, it had such a lightness to it.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
And you know, I think that's the writing. I think that it had the right level of, you know, sort of demonstrating the sci-fi of it and having fun with the sci-fi element of it and not lingering too long on the fact that we've just seen, you know, the most beloved character in British canon killed 8 times on screen. So I think it was really nice to see a story that could go that length, could show the Doctor dying on screen, and played with time.
Yeah.
Matt, there was a story that involved, like, time and stuff in a time travel story.
Really good.
How good is that?
Really good. You know, and I like the way that it wasn't just a time loop. It was a time loop that was constricting. I liked that you lost a minute. And it just made it, you know, just that
properly
little
tense
edge to it. Yeah.
When I was watching it with Stell, and there's like, right, they've had the decoy loop, which I thought was a really fun idea.
Yeah.
I mean, great padding. Just, you know, okay, how much more can they do before they actually have to get out kind of thing. But that last go, Stell kind of like sat up on the sofa and right, here we go.
Every
single time a Dalek would appear in those final couple of loops
and
scupper it, you go, bollocks! You'll get it next time,
time.
It was like playing a video game.
It was, that was my thought. It was like, it's a very game-like episode. There were Maze Theory. Maybe you just need to do that, Dalek in a self-storage. This could have been a game.
That actually worked really well, probably, as like a concept, as for a video game. A couple of really lovely moments, I thought, when Nick finally opens up to Sarah and says, I've got a crush on you sort of thing, and she's like, how long has this been going on? This is a stalker kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the Dalek glides past and kind of overhears it.
Yeah.
That was shot so well. It was like, kind of, you know, what's going on in there?
Yeah, yeah,
was
yeah.
So, it was so great.
And then just that sneaky blast between the two things.
Through the things.
Yeah.
It was like, really good.
Nice shot.
I know. Because he was standing still.
Oh, and I, going back to the plot armour thing, I think people got a little bit upset that the Daleks shot each other.
Did they?
I'm sure I saw a few people go, oh, fuck, okay, what are they doing? You know, Daleks are hopeless. Well, this is the sort of shit that happens in Doctor Who all the time.
Doctor Who and the Daleks. They literally, in the TV episode and in the movie,
yeah.
You would have thought if somebody knew what they were doing about plot armour, they would have changed it for the movie. But yeah. Obviously, because it happens in literally everything, they didn't bother.
Yeah.
They go up behind the Daleks and they literally push them into each other.
Yeah.
And the Daleks staring at each other and they still exterminate each other.
Yeah.
What a ridiculous shit script that is, Matt. I tell you, dreadful.
Oh dear, that's not going to build an empire of merchandise and pop culture it for isn't. The next it, 60 years.
Honestly, I just think the Daleks should have blasted the Doctor as soon as he met them on Skaro.
Yeah, that would have been it.
Yeah. Wouldn't have had all this television to enjoy.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I actually liked that moment. And I liked that the Doctor was like, you just ducked, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like, yeah, all right, that's what you do.
It's set up.
Yeah.
Dalek there, somebody in the middle, they're going to blast him. Obviously, he's going to duck.
Yeah.
And people have evaded Daleks in much better circumstances than that.
Yeah.
When you can have a villain that all needs to happen is you put it on a blanket so it can't touch the floor, you know.
Yeah.
What's more egregious? Sure, that's Daleks in their infancy.
Yeah.
Right? But. Yeah. So what?
It doesn't matter. And, you know, I watched Destiny of the Daleks a few days before, because it's now out on Blu-ray. We didn't talk about that. That's out on Blu-ray.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a bit.
you know, and they're pretty hopeless in that, really. I mean, they freaking look like dog shit.
Yeah, but, yeah.
You know, but that aside, you know, the whole thing of, they even make the joke of, try climbing up after us.
Yeah.
You can't... It's just part of the fun. I think that's it. It's part of the fun. It's like Daleks can't go upstairs. That's part of the fun.
Yeah.
You know, oh, the most dangerous killing machine in the universe can't climb upstairs. Well, that's part of the fun of it.
And like, you know, the Doctor always makes jokes at their expense.
Yeah.
You know, behind closed doors.
Yeah.
They are the most deadly, terrifying, you know, evil killing machine in the universe.
Yeah.
In front of a great space dustbin, as soon as it gets in front of the Doctor, she's taking the piss out of it.
Yeah.
Because... it's a kids' show, which adults watch.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, maybe stop analysing it like it's fucking Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
You know?
That ended like a pile of shite north.
Well, exactly. There we go. So Doctor Who and Game of Thrones have a lot in common.
Yeah. And I'm glad that they finally got rid of the sonic screwdriver can disable Dalek guns.
Yeah.
Because that is a cop-out. Really?
Just like, wait until it happens again.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then it'll be like, well, the Daleks haven't learned then. They've gone backwards. They've regressed. They've regressed in their learning. So many great lines of dialogue in this.
Yeah.
Don't think you're covered by an actor Dalek.
Yeah.
If my life depends on my mother calling me at a time that I actually wanted to call me, we're all dead.
Yeah, that's really
all
good.
That stuff. And the scene where she FaceTimes her mum in the lift.
Yeah.
And she does open up to her and, you know, I love you and all that kind of stuff. And her mum's still going on.
Yeah.
And there's a lovely little look that Asleen B does, like, I tried.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I fucking tried to be nice.
Yeah, yeah,
there
yeah.
we go.
Yeah. It was good. I enjoyed it. It was good fun. It was an hour of fun. What I will say was it was sort of just before they did the decoy
loop.
I was watching it and I looked at my watch and I thought, shit, there's only like 10, 15 minutes of this left.
Mm.
I was like, oh, I kind of hope there might have been a little bit more. Like, the whole story wasn't necessarily going to be an hour loop.
Just the Dalek-related thing.
Yeah, I was hoping that, I don't know, maybe we'd go on to a Dalek saucer or, you know, there'd be something. Mm. I was hoping Davros was going to turn up. I thought, this is the only chance we're going to see Davros
and Jodie together.
Yeah. And it didn't happen. So I was a little bit sad. I was almost thinking, Christ... Davros isn't being stored in this in this sub-storage unit.
They pull the blanket off and he's like, oh, God, I've had that thing on me for ages. Because obviously he can open his eyes now, as we know on camera.
Holy shit. I have far more problems with Davros opening his fucking eyes that he doesn't have than fucking Daleks that can't shoot.
Why did he do... You bash him. I can't do it.
Oh,
I'm not allowed to.
Because I don't fucking know. It's just fucking bollocks. He doesn't have eyes. And he never did.
Because I also thought there was a line of dialogue in there. You know, these Daleks are execution Daleks.
Yeah.
They've been sent there to do a job. they say you are the target.
Yeah.
And they kill the doctor, they succeed in their job. And I was kind of thinking, with everything that Time said to the doctor at the end of the Vanquishers,
yeah.
I thought, and you mentioned the Master in that as well, I thought, is the Master paying off various creatures to do the doctor in? Obviously, it doesn't turn out to be the case,
because
it's crimes against the Dalek race that she's wanted to dead for. But I thought, when we see that bizarre cameo from What's-His-Face, from the woman who fell to her, Carl, was it?
Yeah.
When we saw that, and he's doing a video, I thought the Dwan Master was going to kind of shuffle up next to him and say, oh, better luck next year or whatever.
Because,
you know, that was, he's trapped her in a time loop in a small building with Daleks. No chance she's getting out of this.
Yeah.
Because I also had another theory once we found out that the Sea Devils are back,
which we'll talk about.
there's you know, there's still a big bit of that of Eve of the Daleks to talk about.
Yeah.
But I did kind of think, what if? Okay, so the Master doesn't have the best relationship with the Sea Devils, so you know, maybe you know he's parlayed with them, or the Sea Devil is involved in that story, but maybe he's paid off one of these Chinese pirates to kill the Doctor instead or something. But I was sure, you know, why would we have left that location to go and have this cameo from somebody that none of the main audience are going to actually recognise?
Yeah,
when I didn't recognise until I looked on Twitter and went, oh, what was he doing there?
Well, when he turned up, I said to John, I was like, I'm sure this guy's been in this before.
Yeah.
I'm sure he was in Jodie's first episode, and then Twitter confirmed it for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, weird. I don't know. Yeah, that was a bit odd.
Maybe it's like a final little roll call. Maybe that's the Chibnall version of David Tennant's Doctor going and crying in front of all the other characters
End
of time. Yeah. Let's talk about the fact that the Doctor and Yaz are going to bang by the end of the year. What do we think of the way that it was put across?
Oh, I thought they handled it very well.
I thought it was really lovely.
It was a really nice scene. Mm. And I thought Mandip Gill acted it incredibly well.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I think that was probably like one of the best scenes, I think.
Probably.
Because it was very heartfelt.
Yeah.
And I think Dan, John Bishop, I thought he did the sort of paternal side of things very well. I mean, we all saw it coming a mile off, and especially in Flux. Flux really hammered it in that, you know, there's stuff going on here.
Which is brilliant, because everything I've seen against this happening, which hasn't come from idiots who don't like gay people on television, has been people said, well, there's been no development to prove that these two like each other.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? Why do you think half this community is made up of people that just stand fucking 13 and Yaz?
Yeah.
Like, it's been obvious, maybe not since day one. I think people have shipped it since day one.
Yeah.
But I think that actually on screen, it's been pretty clear for a while that she adores her.
Yeah.
Even if it wasn't going to be a relationship thing, maybe at the very least, you could see she adored her in the same way that, you know, Sarah adored you know, the fourth Doctor, or Joe adored the third Doctor.
Yeah.
You know, those are the kind of companions where there's an unspoken love.
Yeah.
Until Big Finish confirmed that Joe is in love with the third Doctor in The Death of Joe Grant, which is excellent.
Really good.
I thought it was really well handled.
Me too.
I'm really looking forward to seeing how it goes.
Yeah.
Particularly because the Doctor is so unbothered by all of that stuff. This incarnation couldn't really care less about having a conversation about feelings in that way.
Yeah.
Which is exemplified by the way that she reacts when Dan tells her. Because she's just like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And I think it's a really clever little bit of acting and maybe even a clever line, I don't know. Because it's like, she's been like this the whole tenure of her Doctor.
Yeah.
She's been blissfully ignorant of all the things that have been going on around her.
Yeah.
And I love that it appears to be continuing,
because
it's going to get to the point where she can't ignore it anymore.
Yeah.
And that will probably be her downfall.
But that's, you know, I'm sure, obviously I'm sure there will be, you know, a bit, there will be something between the two of them.
Mm.
But that kind of happens when you have, when you know someone's got a crush on you.
Yeah.
And you don't reciprocate it. There is that feeling of like, if I just pretend it's not happening, it'll just go away.
Absolutely.
So
she pretends a lot doesn't happen. And it's not just down to her relationship with Yaz or, you know, feelings mutually or whatever.
Yeah.
you know, I know that everybody talks about that scene with Graham talking about his cancer diagnosis.
Yeah.
You know, she doesn't really behave in the most human of ways there.
No.
But I think that's another element of she's just, you know, blissfully ignorant to the dangers of what she's doing.
Yeah, yeah,
she
yeah.
says, my, you know, my past is catching up with me, time yeah, is catching
time
up with me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, there's obviously going to be an element of her, her kind of whatever, you know, oh, it's all fine, it's yeah, all right, yeah. don't worry. That is going to bite her in the ass.
Yeah.
And I think that this is another indication of that yeah. whole kind of, when Yaz asks her, what did you mean that time's catching up with you at the end? Yeah. And I can see how it would annoy people that every single time Yaz, and Yaz has confronted her about it just in the yeah. last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
You know, you never actually give me a straight answer to any of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't I? Oh well, never yeah. mind, sort yeah. of thing. And I can see how that would annoy people.
Yeah, and she says it when they're going through one of the corridors, didn't she? In this one, she was like, oh, you know, we're never going to get this talk, are we, on the beach where you tell me everything that's going on.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, we will. It's just, you know. And when that scene with her and Dan, and Jodie and Dan, and he was like, oh, you know, maybe tell her, you know, you know, you need to tell her whatever. And she's like, what? Me and Johnny were watching it, and I was just like, there's fucking Daleks going around out there, mate, trying to kill us all. I've got priorities.
That was what I thought, because it is played like the Doctor cannot be unaware
yeah.
that there is this feeling yeah. for her, carried by Yaz. But at the same time, you know, she has got to get everybody out of this situation.
Exactly,
I have
yeah.
not got time to talk about feelings right yeah. now, you know?
Yeah, like, come on. The poor woman is like, when have I had the time to sit down and have a talk about feelings? I've had Santarans to deal with, weeping angels, fecking flamboyant crystal people, what are they called? What were their names? I loved them.
Swarm and Azure.
That was them. I loved them, and then they all went tits up. Now, this made me sad.
Really?
I've forgotten their
are
names.
You totally... We should talk about this, actually.
Mm.
Maybe we can make this the second part of it. But what do we think of Flux now, what, a month on from it finishing, is it? Or maybe slightly...
Yeah.
No, it's probably a couple of weeks. Do you still feel really kind of like...
I feel I feel like I've been kicked in the bollocks.
That's such a shame.
It is a shame.
That's gutting. Because yeah. I'm still really enjoyed it. But I, you know... That finale was really messy.
Yeah.
Clearly very messy. Yeah. But it didn't undo all the goodwill that I felt
about it
beforehand.
And I think why this story works, and I think this story exemplified that Chibnall's best scripts are the small, intimate stories.
Mm.
Like this one.
With a gimmick.
Yeah.
42.
Yeah.
This is basically... 42.
Yeah.
Because it plays with time in the same way.
Yeah.
You know, it's structured within an hour of Doctor Who.
Yeah.
You get the full story of that adventure. That is it.
Yeah.
In a tightly compacted little
Definitely. Yeah, I think
shot.
This one, the angel story that we had earlier in the year,
yeah.
The Haunting of Villa Diodati, those stories that are just small, little cast, base under siege type stories
yeah.
work so much better yeah. than the big, sprawling, globe-trotting stuff that you then get very lost.
That, I think, is the worst aspect of his structuring for stories.
Yeah.
Is why are we suddenly in China?
Yeah.
Why are we suddenly in Tokyo? Why are we suddenly in Rio?
Yeah.
I think it gives it an artificial scale.
Yeah, I mean, I immediately think of Praxeus. Now, I know Chibnall didn't write that story.
Yeah, but it's the same thing.
It's the same thing. It's like, you're here, you're there, you're with these people. There's a load of people over here. And
Revolution of the Daleks.
Yeah, and it's just like, I don't know who I'm supposed to be giving a shit about to the point where now I don't give a shit about any of it.
It's really interesting. When I finished watching Eve before I came here,
yeah,
it was just on the BBC iPlayer on the PlayStation, and it had all the Flux episodes and then Eve of the Daleks at the end. And Stel was sort of saying, I really, really liked Flux. She was pointing out episodes that she liked. We both agreed Survivors was the weakest,
yeah.
besides the whole kind of, oh, the failure was a bit of a damp squib or whatever.
Yeah.
Both thought that the Village of the Angels was superb.
Yeah.
But she said, there were too many characters in Flux. I really couldn't follow it.
Yeah.
Which has been a massive problem with Chibnall's scripts.
Yeah.
That's probably is his inability to sort of move the pieces in the right order, because there's so many things he's trying to cram into the story, and it's just like, just... But then you pare it down, and you pare it down and down and down, and then you get Eve of the Daleks.
Yeah.
And I think with such a small cast, his character stuff comes across so well.
Yeah.
Nick, we'll leave him aside because I think that I understand that a lot of people can't get over him.
Yeah, it was weird. You know, it was weird that you would be like, ah, okay,
no,
he's
exactly.
all right.
And I don't think I can talk about his character without that being the main thing in the middle of it. It's like, you can't get around it.
Yeah.
So talking about Sarah, she was, you know, a bit of a bitch, to be fair. Mm. Like, she wasn't overly pleasant to everybody.
No.
But she's very overworked.
Yeah.
Doesn't like what she's doing.
Yeah.
You got an awful lot of character development from very little screen time.
Yeah.
Majority of that, I would say, is probably down to Azeline Bee's performance because she was exceptional. But I think small scale, just really solid concepts.
Yeah.
And he can write a script really well.
Yeah.
You know, everybody was saying that was the best Chibnall script he's ever written.
Mm.
That was the best. Oh, no, next week. No, that's actually the best one he's written. No, Eve of the Daleks, actually, that's the best one he's written.
Yeah.
Shame it got 3.2 mil.
Yeah, it's a shame. But it was still like the sixth most watched programme of the day.
I think it was fifth.
Oh, was it? Oh, okay.
Fourth or fifth.
Still, it was in the top 10.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you look at the viewing figures for stuff on Christmas Day, that was
awful.
really low.
There was nothing good on, though.
Nothing good on, no. I mean, I didn't know what else was on New Year's Day. New Year's Day is always a funny
probably
one
a
anyway.
Probably Call the Midwife.
Probably, something like that.
Mrs. Brown's Boys is on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
Because I believe they say that they won't do Mrs. Brown's Boys unless they get a Christmas Day slot.
Right.
Because we just won't make it this year then. Give us Christmas Day, otherwise we won't make it.
Wow. Jesus Christ. No, don't bother.
Yeah, please.
Save everybody. But yeah, even that underperformed.
That didn't do very well.
No.
God, is this the last Christmas with television?
Oh my God, yeah.
does it get down to like, you know, there's 11,000 people watching BBC One on Christmas Day. Maybe we just switch the channel off. Maybe we just leave it as is and everyone can just do Netflix stuff. Well, there we go.
Yeah.
That was Eve of the Daleks.
Yeah, it was good. Probably the last time we'll see the Bronze Daleks.
That was another thing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Everybody saying, because, I mean, I think it was quite symbolic to see them blown apart at the end.
Yeah.
It kind of feels like, there they are, that's the send-off.
Yeah.
Unless this whole thing forces are amassing against you means multiple villains, multiple Doctor Who villains coming back, in which case maybe be the Bronze Daleks coming back. But if that's it, I think a very fitting farewell to them. It's not a bad story to go off on.
No.
Absolutely not. What do you do with them then after this? What do you do to a Dalek as a design?
I don't know.
What do you add to them? How do you make them more special or more threatening?
I like the shape and form of these Russell ones. I think perhaps if I was to do it, and I always go back to the Prydonian on Twitter because his redesigns are so perfect.
Stunning.
You know, they're beefy, but he sort of makes them more elegant and slender, kind of like an older series Dalek.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think it needs... His designs always have that sort of 50s, 60s sci-fi elegance, but they look practical. Mm. I think it needs something like that. I think we've gone past the early noughties sort of like sci-fi needs to look like it has a purpose, which is like a Star Wars-y type thing. That Star Wars-y thing of it needs to look lived in, which I think is great, but I don't think you need to apply it to absolutely everything.
Mm.
And I think perhaps with the Daleks, you know, the nuts and bolts and like, we're grungy Daleks.
Yeah.
I don't think it needs that anymore.
No.
You know, you can be a bit more sleek and a bit nicer.
Yeah, I like that. I think that one of the big issues with Dalek designs, and I think something that Prydonian kind of works around, is the new series Daleks were made to the height of Billy Piper's eyeline.
Yeah.
The paradigms were made to Matt Smith's eyeline,
right.
I believe. So I think maybe we just build them however tall they need to be.
Yeah, that's true. They seem a bit weird.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I understand maybe from like a shooting perspective why that was thought about.
Yeah.
But, you know, long term, these things are going to be used across a lot of different actors.
Agreed.
They will outlive the people whose contracts are signed on.
And I think, you know, when you look at the new series Daleks, they are a beautiful design, but it's like with any Dalek prop, you get up close to them and you're actually kind of like that.
Yeah.
Kind of looking down on them.
Yeah.
And I suppose that kind of is part of the fun, is that they're little tanks, yeah. And they've got, they're very shouty, but actually when you get up close to them, they're minuscule.
Yeah, yeah, they're dinky, aren't they?
But maybe you just make them 6 foot tall and, you know, make them look really cool and sleek and elegant. Yeah, yeah, maybe that's the next step.
Give them a nice big fat fender, like in
big the... Big fat fender.
Like in the Peter Cushing films.
And Matt likes a big fat fender. So those are all of my notes for Eve of the Daleks. So yeah. Let's talk about the main event.
Yeah.
They saved the best till last.
They certainly did.
Legend of the Sea Devils. Is it Sea Devils or Sea Devil?
Sea Devils. Yeah, whoa. I had this conversation with someone on good. Twitter. I was like, oh, do we think this is just one Sea Devil? And then it's like, no, it is Sea Devils. And then okay. I read the press releases, like, oh, the Sea Devils are coming back.
Cool.
Like, there must be more than one then.
How good do they look?
They look friggin' amazing. We were watching the trailer and you get that blurry shot and I was like, that's a sea devil!
I saw that when you see the frills yeah. I went, shit! And Stel, and she got a bit funny with me afterwards, I think.
Right.
Because I went, oh my, I freaked out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then I was going through Twitter, she said, yeah, go and do your Twitter thing, you've got to do your Twitter thing. And
yeah, like, see, I used to have all that as well.
I know.
I think it's just one of those things.
But you have to.
Yeah.
I've got to tell everybody.
Yeah.
Look how exciting this is.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
great. But it was the blurred frills.
Yeah.
I went, it's not.
Yeah.
And then they got fuck. If you can tell what the monster is, that
out from, of focus.
That is when a redesign
yeah.
absolutely works.
Yeah.
I was sold on it from the second I realised the silhouette was a sea devil.
Yeah.
I knew it would look amazing.
Yeah. They look so good. I was so pleased. Because, you know, with redesigning a monster, there is a tendency to try and make things better.
Yeah.
And look at what happened to, like, the Zygons. The Zygons are nowhere near as good as what they looked like in the 70s. And here...
I don't mind them.
The new Zygons.
I think they look a bit too, like, foam.
I
think you can see that it's made out of some kind of, you know, latex foam or expanded foam or whatever it is. But you can kind of...
Yeah, they're all right. I just think...
You can see the texture of it.
Yeah.
I know exactly what noise it would make. If I ran a wet finger down it would go...
Yeah. Yeah.
I know that's the noise that it would make.
That's the Zygon noise.
I touched its erogenous zones.
Yeah.
I do have one slight issue with it.
The Sea Devil.
One slight issue, and I only noticed it watching it just now.
Yeah.
I don't know how animated the face is practically.
Yeah.
Because I think when it comes up to the camera, there's a bit of digital.
Yeah.
Its brow goes down, and
yeah.
it kind of like
yeah.
that. And I thought, oh, is it going to be like that all the way through? I really hope not, because that stuff can look dodge.
It can look dodge. I thought it looked quite good in the trailer.
Yeah.
I was quite impressed. I was like, fucking hell, he's like, move, it's...
It looked good, but,
yeah.
but watching it, I was like, that is clearly CG.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just because I watched Cats and Dogs the other day on New Year's Eve. But
right.
I just thought that is the same level. Oh, it's the same, sorry, not the same level. It's the same type of CG
yeah, yeah,
when you
yeah.
animate a face.
Yeah.
To and do its eyes and stuff, and
yeah.
it's just like it doesn't quite work.
Yeah, I know. I can see what you mean.
But I thought it looked good there.
Yeah,
but I just thought that could be a problem
later
over,
on. Yeah, over
you know,
the,
58 minutes.
Yeah, I mean they literally look exactly the same.
Yeah, and the full outfit.
The outfit's cool,
and it's got this kind of kimono kind of.
Yeah,
And I thought, wow, nice kind of streaks and texturing. You go up closer, it's a barnacle.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's all like seaweed and stuff hanging off of it.
But they still got all like netting underneath and like the brace, the necklace thing has got like netting in it as well.
I thought that was such a lovely little touch. Just a little reminder that, you know, maybe in other civilizations.
We just wear nets.
That's what, they just wear nets.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and that one's choking. It's got a thing around its neck because someone's chucked a beer can away and it's swallowed a beer.
I like how that's happened after we had this whole thing about sea devils in Bristol Harbour.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was like, oh.
Gagging up condoms.
Yeah.
I thought
clearly our pitch didn't cut the mustard. They were like, we like the idea of a sea devil.
We'll take the sea devils out of it, but we'll get rid of them catching gonorrhea by dipping a fin into Bristol Harbour. Yeah, I thought they looked... phenomenal.
Yeah, I'm so pleased that they're coming back. Because
yeah.
this was really like the last big monster, wasn't it? Really?
Can you think of any other recurring... A monster that's had two or more adventures that hasn't come back?
The only one that I could think of would be the Yeti. Would be the only other monster.
But we've kind of had the Great Intelligence and the Snowmen were kind of that. Because what is a Yeti? A Yeti is an animated... It's a robot.
Yeah, it's a furry robot.
Right, but like...
Robot furry.
But it's like, you know... It's a weird villain because it's so oddly specific to that one story.
Yes.
And then you've got a great idea, a great way of bringing them back in the Web of Fear. But then what, you know, how much do you have to contrive?
I just told you they're at a furry convention and the Yetis come out.
Sorry, I forgot.
It's like, oh, here's a nice bear. Do you have bears in the furry community? I don't know. I don't know how it all works.
They've got cats, dogs, bears, fish.
You know what I mean?
They've got everything.
Fish?
Probably, yeah.
Really?
They got our fish.
A fucking gormless fish, mate. Sea devil head.
Have sex by...
Someone's got a sea devil head on.
They have sex by kind of like going up next to each other and touching shoulders and sort of rubbing and then walking away from each other.
Oh my God.
Grim.
Wow.
Anyway, sorry. Fairies aside...
Obviously, we shouldn't kink shame. Is it kink? Well, I guess it is, isn't it?
I don't know. I kind of feel like if you say it's a kink, if we're kink shaming some people, they'll go, it's not actually a kink.
Oh.
I just like dressing up as a dog and having people
feed me. I'm so sorry,
Pugsy.
You've got hearing these things.
He's only a child. He's not used to hearing all of
For
these
audio
things.
Listeners, we've got Pudsey Bear on the table.
There we go. I like the way you said that by addressing the camera.
I did, yes.
For our audio listeners at home. How many more are there? That's kind of it.
Yeah. And it was like the one that every year Ogrons and Draconians would
Draconians.
Be cool. Yeah. Mm. But I think Sea Devils... I think they're like they're really iconic. Like people kind of remember the sea.
Yeah.
Devils. Everyone sort of remembers. Oh yeah, can you remember the one with
where
the
they come out of the sea?
Yeah. More so than the Silurians, I think. I think
Definitely.
Your man on the street would know a sea devil more than it would know a Silurian.
And I think that the design is so divorced. The new series design
is
so divorced from the original.
Yeah.
Besides the fact they've got that kind of crown thing, you wouldn't really know that it's supposed to be that old monster.
Yeah. And I think. Me and Johnny said this. It was probably like, people were really pissed with the Silurians. So if we're going to bring the Sea Devils back, we need to make sure we really
do
it right.
I think really, ever since the Silurians, they've got, and they've got all the prior ones right, I think. But
yeah.
I think the Silurian and the Paradigm Dalek, because they both appeared in the same year.
Yeah.
I think it just got people worried that whenever they do redesign monsters, it's not going to be that good.
Yeah.
But, you know, Revolution of the Daleks, the new kind of Dalek design looks brilliant. Mm. I think it looks fantastic. The Cyber Warriors.
Yeah, they look great.
I don't like the spikes, but they look really cool.
They do look really cool.
It's a shame they're stompy and not, you know, mincy, but that's fine.
Mincing Cybermen.
The Sea Devils, obviously.
Yeah, Sontarans.
They've just got it so right. Ray Holman, isn't it, who designs the costumes?
He designs the costumes. I don't know who does all the prosthetic stuff, but...
Just nailed it.
Yeah, I think if there's one takeaway we have from the Chibnall era is that he really knows how to respect the original monsters.
Mm. And people say he's not a fan.
Yeah, I know, it's bonkers. You know, like, look at them. He literally just went, do that.
Yeah.
Do that, but put a bit more clothes on him.
Yeah. Let's not have, you know, swinging
sea devil
todgers. What would it look like an eel?
What, a sea devil's cock?
Something like that.
I don't know, like, how do, like, amphibians work?
I think they go up next to each other, don't they?
Oh, do they?
And they kind of wiggle and then...
Gyrate.
Yeah, and then they just kind of, you know, cheers and see you later and do you want my number?
Well, after the act, do you want my number?
Do you want my number now?
Yeah.
Well, you might want it again, I don't know. Was it good for you as well? Sea Devils are back and I could not be happier.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be a cool story. You know, it's literally what we were talking about in our Christmas special.
Yeah.
Where we were like, they've never done anything really in China or Japan or any, you know, that side of the world other than Marco Polo. Finally get to see something.
And the globe hopping thing, I kind of feel like, well, we've got our fill of going to those countries.
Yeah.
But A, it's shot on a retail estate in Cardiff.
Yes.
And B, you never actually meet anyone?
No.
And you don't spend any extended period of time there to learn the culture and you know, the history of this character, feared female pirate.
Yeah, they land there for 5 seconds.
Yeah.
There's a landmark in the background to let us know where they are.
And a big thing that says, Konnichiwa.
Yeah. And then, we're in Japan. Yeah. Right. Oh, but the rest of the story is taking place over here. So
we're going to go over there. Yeah.
So it'll be nice to actually go, okay, we're in this place and, you know, we're going to learn a bit of history because this pirate queen actually existed.
I know nothing about it.
Neither
I'm not
do
gonna
I.
Do any research because I'm really looking forward to Doctor Who telling me about him.
Yeah, I mean, I can only assume if I was to read Wikipedia, it would tell me that she fought sea devils at some point.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Murka?
Well, oh, come on. Yeah, bring the Murka back.
That's the myth of the Kraken is actually a Murka.
Well, we all know that the Merca has very strong martial arts skills.
True.
And where else better to use it than in a story with Chinese pirates?
Which box set came out before Christmas?
Season 17.
Season 17 came out before Christmas.
Yeah, I've only watched Destiny of the Daleks and City of Death so far. But it looks
same.
Really good.
It does look really good.
The restoration, like particularly on City of Death, because I think that was quite an early-ish release on DVD.
Oh, of it on in HD?
No, when it came out on DVD.
Oh, it was one early on. Oh,
so I
right,
think the,
sorry.
The difference in the picture quality is quite obvious, yeah. I think it looks really great.
I have watched most of Destiny.
Yeah.
And not all of, but most of City of Death.
Yeah.
And I've come to the conclusion that City of Death Part 1 is not very entertaining.
Do you not think?
I don't want to see 15 minutes of Tom and Lala running around Paris. To It's the music that kills me.
Oh, that's good. It's such a great piece.
It's a great piece, but I don't need to hear it 15 times.
Oh, that's, for me, that is like Dudley's like last hurrah, because I think sort of towards that point in his tenure, the scores are sort of sounding very much like, oh, this is just incidental music.
Yeah.
Nothing really sort of necessarily stands out like from like in other stories that he did.
Of course.
But then this one has like got a really nice feel to it. Like you can really feel like he was energised by what he was given. Like, oh, France and bloody art galleries
and
shit.
What he was energised by is the fact that he's got 15 minutes of film reel that he's been asked to score.
Yeah.
That's why.
Well, I've got to come up with something here.
I've got my working boots on here. They've finally given me something meaty to get into. It's just a shame that I've only got two melodies.
We haven't got an accordion in the office.
And someone occasionally going, into the microphone. Yeah. I think it's a beautifully restored set, as they all are.
Yeah.
Special features-wise, a bit more thin on the ground with this release than previous ones?
I think so. The Destiny of the Daleks making of was really nice because it was good to see Tom.
And David Goodison.
And David Goodison chatting about Davros, yeah. And I like the way that they sort of framed it with Davros's narration.
Yeah.
That was cool.
And nice to hear him doing the role.
Yeah. What I also liked,
yes,
from a personal standpoint, was that the people that made that documentary used Action Essentials for all of the explosions on Skaro.
Did
and I was
they?
Like, not only do I use those for the Yogscast at work, but I also use them in my action figure adventures.
He did.
So, hey, you know, there we go.
The legacy of Batman March's action figure adventures lives on.
Even in
the Doctor Who collection sets.
And it's one of the bloody geezers who directed... Geezers? The guys who directed Flux only storyboarded the opening sequence of Flux with action figures.
Did they indeed?
Yeah.
With the bar.
Josh Snares tweeted me in and was like, oi, they're stealing your gig. And I'm like, I'm owned royalties here.
Give Matt his due.
Yeah.
Here you go, Russell. Have a story like Planet of the Giants.
But they all get turned into toys. Celestial Toymaker story.
And they get turned into their action figures.
Holy fucking shit.
Because then you get to launch the line.
Yeah.
And
you can buy the literal toys. It's like Toy Story.
Yeah. Perfect.
My God. There we are. Come on, Russell.
He's your DOP for the story.
Yeah.
I know how to light the scene with a lamp.
A lamp, yeah.
And a bit of white paper.
Yeah.
And all that, 'cause I saw how they were made.
Yeah.
It's not, you know.
I say, what this set needs is more VHS boxes holding up.
What this story needs is more He-Man action figures popping up every now and again.
Yeah.
What that figure needs is more Milliput, actually, is what it needs.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we've exhausted every possible talking avenue about this story in particular.
Yeah.
What would you give out of 10?
7 or an 8.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I'd give it an 8.
Yeah.
I think I'd give it a strong 8.
Yeah.
Because I you know that thing people say about, oh, it flew by? It didn't really.
No.
But I really enjoyed it unfolding. And I thought, I actually don't want this to end. I could watch another 20 minutes of this.
Yeah.
And I don't really get that with Doctor Who. I kind of feel like either there's 5 minutes left and they're
They're
still at the incident. You know, they haven't really done anything to resolve it.
Yeah.
Or you are looking at your watch going, when is this going to finish?
Yeah.
This has been going on for far too long.
Yeah.
And I guess I had a bit of both. I didn't want it to end.
Yeah.
But I was noticing that it was still rolling. I thought, is this like an hour 20?
Yeah, it feels
like an hour 20 this has been going on for.
Yeah.
And I was really surprised when it was only 58 when I was watching it on
iPad. And this is what I mean when I looked at my watch and thought, oh, right, we've only got so much left and they're just still in this time loop. I would have loved to have seen them go on the Dalek spaceship and seen how they dealt with that kind of thing, you know. But it was good.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
Magnifique. So, in terms of the review of Death, we have got Galaxy 4.
Yes.
Class.
Oh, Christ. I forgot about that.
There's another box set coming out in March, apparently.
Apparently.
So we might talk about that.
We might talk about that.
Whatever it is.
I kind of want to talk about the Sea Devils.
Yeah.
I feel like we need to talk about the Sea... Or maybe Warriors of the Deep.
Come back... Within the next couple of weeks and months, you don't really know yet. And you will get your reviews of Galaxy 4, plus, of course, talking about any Doctor Who news that comes up.
Yep.
You'll get Class. You'll get the Roddies.
Get the Roddies.
We'll get Johnny in for that. And we'll do Warriors of the Deep.
Yeah. Not the Sea Devils. I guess if we talk about the Sea Devils, we'll just be like, isn't it good?
isn't it lovely?
Yeah. What a good story.
And nobody wants to listen to people being positive about Doctor Who, because that doesn't get you likes on Twitter or views on YouTube.
Yeah. I think I saw someone moaning about the Sea Devils the other day. And I was like, what the fuck?
Well, they're wrong.
Yeah. It's like one of my greatest comfort Doctor Who stories ever.
It's a good comfort Who, isn't it?
It is. When I was in hospital with kidney stones at the tender age of 15, my brother brought in the Sea Devils. And I watched the Sea Devils in... Bristol Children's Hospital.
As you were pissing rocks.
Yes, pissing rocks. There you go.
We'll do that. And then if you guys want to let us know anything you'd like us to review, then tell us. Because, you know, we've got the centenary special Easter. Are we thinking Easter? No, centenary is at the end of the year.
Yeah.
So Legend Easter, maybe.
Yeah. Oh, it's my birthday on the 30th of March. Come on, get putting it out around there. That'd be nice. Nice birthday present.
You might have another birthday present that's shaped sort of about that size and about that tall and about that deep. And I've got you a dildo for Christmas.
Oh, right. Oh, thank you. Oh, okay.
For your birthday.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think Mandip Gill's that small.
Well, unless you get a tissue compression eliminator.
Yeah.
They're very easy to carry around. I was talking about the collection.
Oh, I see what you mean. Oh, yeah, right, okay, fair enough. I'm just dumb.
You're not dumb. I just worded it bizarrely. We've got that to come maybe in March at some point.
Yeah.
And so, and then we'll also do...
The centenary
special at the end
of
the year.
And I'm sure at some point this year, we might even announce who the new Doctor Who is.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
Yeah.
So we've heard from Russell that... auditions have happened.
Oh, I thought you were saying, like, we personally. No. I heard from Russell, like, you reached out to Russell today to get him here.
Do not think if I had a direct line to Russell, I wouldn't have already told you.
Yeah, true.
So we've got, scripts have been kind of written.
Yeah, he said he's written scripts.
And people have been auditioned.
Yeah, he said auditions have started.
God. Isn't that mental?
That's bonkers.
There's people in contention for Doctor Who have read those lines already. To be the new Doctor Who.
They have read the words TARDIS.
They have read the words TARDIS. And Russell has written TARDIS interior on a script.
Yeah.
Nuts.
Yeah.
But I kind of like the fact as well that people are only really talking about Jodie's Doctor Who at the moment.
Yeah.
It's kind of nice.
I guess that's it, isn't it? You know, what else can we talk about?
But
what can we say?
But before Flux, it was just like, oh, shame that Flux is coming up because people are only ever going to be focused on Russell. And then it kind of, people went, oh, actually, no, this is... quite good, isn't it?
And yeah, that's true.
Again, Eve of the Daleks, I only saw positive things about it, you know? Even the people that were talking about plot armour were like, it was good, it's just that took me out of the story.
I mean, that's just... Yeah.
What stories can you watch?
Yeah.
Let's not talk about that anymore.
Yeah. And I think Jodie did a really good job as well in this episode. I thought I really enjoyed her.
She was very, very good. I loved the bit where she turns around to face the Dalek in the storage lockup.
Yeah.
And that kind of, you know, our chances of getting out of here are exactly zero.
Yeah.
And I was like, damn, like, she's really quite serious. So she's got to face this Dalek and like, can I talk my way out of this? Well, no, by now she's worked out, it's a loop.
And I just
thought that whole bit was really great. Mm. I think that's a really great sequence of bits, actually.
Do you know what we should have had for this episode?
What?
Beef and beans.
we should have had beef and beans.
Yeah. Is that actually a real thing, or is that just some weird...
Beef and beans. Well, I mean, not the exact brand.
Can you go into a supermarket and buy a tin of beef and beans?
Yes, of course you can.
Can you? I've never seen it.
You could buy Doctor Who bloody spaghetti hoops a couple of years ago.
True.
So, you know, it's not mad. Yeah.
I just thought, Chris, fuck it. Beef and beans.
Beef and beans, whatever. Maybe that was what he had for his din-dins that night.
Yeah, and he thought, you know what the world needs? More beef and beans. He was tucking it in and he thought, if this came in a can, this would be a millionaire.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Dragon's Den, that's what he's going to do after Doctor Who. He's like,
Chris's investment was actually what you saw on screen there. That was his beef and bean empire that collapsed when he got the job for Doctor Who. So he's had them all in storage since. God bless. Well, thanks very much for watching, ladies and gents. I've been banging this table like a motherfucker today. I do apologise.
I don't think... Well, I mean, we'll pick it up, but it won't be like when we have the microphones on the thing.
Thank the Lord.
Yeah, because that would have just reverberated.
We can bang away now. Thanks very much for watching, ladies and gents.
Thank you.
I feel weird doing the sign-off. You do it. You're much better at it than me.
Yeah, bye then.